Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de Lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
Have a seat, everyone. And again, I want to say thanks for being here today on a crazy blizzard morning. And if you're watching online, we're really happy that you're here. And mornings like this, I'm grateful for so many teams. And obviously, I'm always grateful for our teams. But I just want to mention one quick thing. When you walked in, you should have all got a bookmark. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to try to make this available as well on our website. But I'm going to encourage you, if you can, this little bookmark that I'm going to explain in a few minutes is something that we've made. Thanks, bro. You can put on your fridge, you can see it, and we've done something that we don't usually do. We actually put dates on it, and you know, this morning I was like, if we cancel our service, then the dates are all crazy. Whose idea was it to put the dates on this? It's probably Janina's. Fire Janina. No, I'm kidding. No, it wasn't Janina's. But we wanted to kind of give you a snapshot of over the next few weeks what we're going to be learning and talking about together. And the series, we decided to call it Anchored. Because all of us know that at some point in our lives, we have to kind of get honest about the things that we're choosing to anchor our life in, right? And anchoring our life is something that you actually have to do this to be human. To be human is to have a place that you kind of find your peace, you're anchored in something that's bigger than yourself. And a lot of people, like me and you know this, like that our world offers different things that we should anchor our lives in. I know many, many people who are anchoring most of their lives on hoping their kids get into the best school. Because that means they're going to have a great education, they're going to be very successful. So they're making a commitment to say our lives are going to be anchored on that happening. Or many people are anchoring their lives on hoping that something, they get a new job or they get that perfect relationship. And all of these things are not bad things. But every so often, we're invited again to say, God, what kinds of things are really the things that are going to hold my life together? When I think about the kind of people, when I think about the kind of person I need to be, the kind of people we want to become, and the kind of church God's calling us to be. And so this morning is going to feel like a very unique sermon. For many of you, because I'm going to weave together some important things that some of you, I'm going to assume in this room, and if you're watching online, kind of have heard before, and some of you, you're going to hear for the very first time. And so a series like this is really meant to stretch us and to call us to a deeper place in how we understand our faith. And I want to tell you why I feel that this series is so important, because ever since my wife and I came back here and the 180 started about 3 years ago now, I often get the same question that people ask me. They'll ask me this question. They're like, oh, you're a pastor of a church? I'm like, yeah, you know. And they're like, is that like a priest? I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, I don't get into the whole thing. And they're like, oh, can you guys like baptize children or do you baptize adults? And then I often say this. I'm like, you know what? To make it very simple, we're a church that's rooted on the creed of the Christian faith. The most essential way that Christians have talked about what it means to be a Christian. And people say to me, what does that mean? And I'm like, you don't know what the creed is. They're like, no. I'm like, wow. And many people, I'm always shocked at how for so many of them, people even who call themselves Christians and have been in church their whole lives, have never really been given kind of a framework for what it means to say, I'm a Christian. Now, if you ask somebody if they're a Christian today, you ask five people, you'll probably get 10 different answers, right? And the reason is that many people, when they learn about a faith tradition, when they learn about what they believe, they learn about it primarily through a denominational family or the way that they got saved. So for example, I grew up learning a little bit about the church in a Roman Catholic church because I was young and my mom went to Roman Catholic church and I was an altar boy. Any altar kids? No? All right. Forget it. No place for you in heaven. Too bad. Okay. So you can laugh, it's okay. So I was, and then when I was about 13 years old, my mom started going to a Protestant church, not just any Protestant church, Pentecostal. So that's like fire, fuego, más fuego, right? It's winter, it's got nothing on that. So that, and I was always thinking like, is this the same thing? Like, is this different? Can we agree or disagree? Is there something that's bigger that holds all of this together? And part of the creed and part of what we're going to talk about, you're going to see it on your bookmark, and I'll emphasize it in a minute, right, is the way that Christians for thousands of years have said, if we can talk about Jesus and our faith like this, Roman Catholics, Protestants, and Orthodox have all said, these kinds of things really unite us. These are the most essential things that we as Christians agree, no matter where you live in the world. And the reason this was very, very important for Christians is because Christianity was a religion that started to grow. Now, if something doesn't grow, it doesn't matter. Like, because it could just be us four in a room and we can just say, hey, you're fine. But as Christianity started to grow and as the church expanded in different cultures around the world, you know, now billions of Christians, they often came back to this question, is what will anchor us in what we believe about Jesus? What will anchor the way we speak about who God is and what God does in the world? What will do that? And so I'm going to explain to you how they worked on this thing called the creed. And what I want to do for the next few weeks, if you look at your bookmark, you'll see the dates there, is every Sunday what I'm going to try to do is to break a part off of that creed to kind of explain it in a deeper way and show you how in the Bible, a lot of the things we affirm that are in the scriptures are connected to this creed idea. This idea of like, oh, this is what Christians have said. This is what Christians have believed. And so let me say it this way. Maybe this will make it simpler for some of you. That the best way to learn how to defend your faith is to make sure you understand it. Say it again. The best way to defend your faith and to be able to defend what you believe is to make sure you really understand it. We have a whole like business in Christianity about how do you defend your faith and how do you prove to people that they're wrong and that we're right and all of this stuff, and most of that is nonsense. But there's this whole world that exists out there. And the most simple place that most people don't begin is to say, do I actually really understand what it means to be a Christian? Have I really kind of grappled with what it is I really believe about Christianity? And if you don't think this is important, just show up at Youth Alpha for 5 minutes. For a few minutes. Like, don't, because you're not a youth. But you know what I mean? Like, just be with the next generation who some have been in church for a long time, my kids included, and they're like, all kinds of different ideas about faith and God and religion and Jesus and the Bible, all these things. You put them in a nice pot and you're like, I think we're in trouble. I think we're in trouble. So one of the things I hope to do in this series is to give you new language so that you can share with someone who's thinking about faith or has questions about God to say, you know what? We actually are a church that's really rooted and anchored in the way Christians have talked about Jesus for thousands of years. And we're actually learning how to do that. And if you're interested in Christianity, then you'd love this series. This is a series really for someone who wants to know what is Christianity really all about. When I was in a seminary, which is training to be a pastor, I had a chance to go on a class called the World Religions Tour. And I went on this World Religions Tour, and it was in Toronto. And as part of that class, we visited a Buddhist temple, a Hindu temple, a mosque, a synagogue, and obviously we were Christians, so it was, I knew enough about church, right? And I realized in those moments how complicated and how difficult it would be for us to continue to talk about what it means to be Christian and at the same time understand and respect people of other religious traditions and say, you know what, on that, I think it's really, really different. And on that, I'm not sure Christians believe that the same as other religions. And for many, many people, they never kind of learned this. And I'm realizing one of the most essential things that we can do together is to say, oh, this is really, really helpful. And I'm always mindful of this, that after a series like this, you'll know whether you're a Christian. You will. Many people can come to church and say, oh, you believe in God? Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you into faith? Yeah, yeah, I'm into all that stuff. But for some people, it's time in their lives to really get honest and say, you know what? I believe in spirituality. I believe in God. I believe in the energy out there. I believe in people doing good things. I believe in all these things. But you know what? If being a Christian is to affirm the things that are on this ancient creed of Christianity, I'm not one of them. And you know what? We've created the safe space as a church that it's okay to say that. Jesus didn't have any room for liars. If Jesus didn't have patience for his people who pretended to say one thing and did something else, Jesus couldn't handle hypocrites. So we are really committed if people get to the place where they're like, you know what, as I understand this series, I'm not sure really if I've understood really what it means to be a Christian. And also when you look at the creed and as you read it, one of the things that I've started to do, because I knew we were in this series, obviously, I started reading this with my oldest son before he goes to bed at night. I would just read through it. I'm like, Josiah, dad's going to read this. He's like, okay. He's mostly falling asleep while I'm reading it. But we'll get there. We're working on it. But I would just read it and say, hey, this is the most ancient way that Christians have talked about what it means to follow Jesus. And you'll see that the creed doesn't have everything in there. It doesn't tell you how to get baptized. It doesn't say you should get baptized. It doesn't have all of the different ways that Christians have had to work out their faith in different ways. But it has the most essential anchor to say, this is it. This is one of the ways that you can learn how to understand and appreciate what it means to be a Christian. Now, in our culture, when I say the word creed, I'm very much aware that people have a different idea that comes to mind. And I have a picture for this. You can go to that image. Like, I think of most people, I tell them creed and they think of this. Anyone else? 100%. They're like, creed, oh, your church is showing the movie. I'm like, nope, we're not doing that. And so I think it's hilarious for people that when they're not used to church or they're not really aware of what Christians believe, it's understandable that this would be confusing. So to kind of start us off today, I'm going to go through the first part of the creed that you'll see on January 20th. I'm going to talk about what it means that Christians affirmed God as a father from the beginning. Why was that so important, right? But before I do that, I want to kind of explain to you a little about where we get this idea of creed. Because in the Bible times, we know that even when Jesus was around, there were so many people who had different opinions about who he was. Different ideas, different perspectives. They didn't have Facebook, obviously, but if you just look at the internet has all kinds of information. Like, if you're really a Christian, you shouldn't do this. And if you're really a Christian, you should do this. And if you're really a Christian, you should do this. And I grew up being like, whoa, what does it even mean to be a Christian? I know somebody in my family who used to be a Christian and over the years has decided that Christianity is just a joke and had really a bad experience with church. And one of the things he often says to me, he'll say, you know what, Christians should just figure out what they agree amongst themselves before they start telling other people about Christianity. That's always like a deadly, It's like, you're like, yeah, we should get along more. And I often will say, you know what, we do have something that Christians have used for thousands of years as a way of saying, we agree on these things, but there's some other things that, because we're finite and not always as smart and don't have God's perspective on everything, on some other things, our perspective is limited. And so this morning, I want to show you how the creed becomes this essential, beautiful, historical document that Christians will start to emphasize because it was the best way to affirm what was already in the Bible. It was the best way to explain what was in the Bible. And so I want to just show you this passage in the Bible when Jesus asks his disciples about what people are saying about him. It's found in the book of Matthew, and it says this, that Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? The Son of Man was a title for the one who would come, who would be connected to God and would transform mankind. Okay, it's kind of a title for Jesus, for himself. So Jesus says, hey, what are people saying on the streets about me? Now, just so you know, Jesus knows the answer to this question, okay? So he wants his disciples to pay attention so that they understand if they know what people are saying about him on the streets. And this is what they say. They replied, some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, which was a prophet. Still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And this is like the first real test that we have where Jesus says, if you're going to be my disciples, you have to know where people are at in their lives. I'm going to ask you, think about somebody that you care about. If I asked you, what do people in your family, who do they say Jesus is? Would you know? Your coworker. If you said to them, hey, have you ever heard about this guy called Jesus? They might say, oh, the soccer player? Jesus? Him? No, not him. Jesus of Nazareth. Have you ever heard of him? You know, we're living in a time where many people don't even know who Jesus is. Like, they've never even heard of Jesus. So in some ways, we're starting like on a level playing field that where we get to kind of begin this again. But what Jesus is assuming is that his disciples already are living in a world where they're paying attention to different beliefs that people have about him. So it's not anything new than us, and it's not anything different than us. But what will start to happen is as Christianity grows, the earliest Christians will start to kind of think of a way of saying, how do we continue to talk about this Jesus who is dead and now is alive to all of these people who are going to come and believe in him? And so the creed becomes one of the primary things that Christians will start to use. And I'm going to go to a slide now, and if you're a little bit tired, this is a part of the sermon that I remember when I was preparing that you could feel like you could doze off. Okay? So if there's somebody next to you and you're prone to being tired because you have to clean your car and you have to shovel, just tell them, if you see me dozing off, just give me one of these. Okay? Okay, this is one of the things I want to explain to help you understand the kind of foundation of how the creed kind of started and how we have it. So you can go to the side of the creed and what it means. So creed comes from this Latin word, which means credo. If you speak a Latin language or speak Italian or even, you know, other languages, a similar word, is I believe. This I believe. And you don't have to be religious to have a creed. I know people, you go into their house, they have this big wall, and they say, in this home, this is what we're going to do. We're going to laugh. We're going to hug. We're going to arm wrestle. We're going to punch people in the face. All right, this is what you do. All right, right, whatever. They have these big things. You know people like that? It's one of you. I'm never coming to your house, ever. It's garbage. That's garbage. But you buy these murals, they paint them on their wall, and the words, right? That's them saying, this is kind of our creed. Like, we believe these things. We want these things to be in our house, right? Now, what they won't tell you is they're not going to die for that creed. It's just like they hope it makes people not fight in their house. And I have people, every time I go to people's house, I'm like, there's a creed right there. And I have people in my family who have those in their house. And it's always funny because when I go visit and I see them, I kind of make a note of it. And when they do something that it doesn't say on that, I'm like, hey, wait a second, we're about laughter. It's in the creed right here. This family laughs. Laugh. You realize that you can have something that you write on the wall that looks very nice. It's a different thing to live it. Okay, it's a totally different thing. So to have a creed is not necessarily a Christian thing. It's just to have a set of beliefs that we feel, and you're like, we're going to anchor ourselves in what this says. In Christianity, the creed was not only a way of speaking about Jesus and about God, but it was something that was very, very clear what was worth dying for and what wasn't. Say that again. There are too many people dying for things that are not worth dying for because they've never understood the major things that are worth dying for. Okay, there's just too many Christians. They're like losing it on the minor things and the major things that are like game-changing things. They don't even talk about them. And I've personally experienced this over the years as a pastor. I've been with people who are like, hey, does this church believe in the right way of the end times? I'm like, well, we're going to talk about that. And we believe in that. And by the way, it's in the creed. We'll get to it. Right? But, you know, I'll say to them, does your church believe in the Trinity? They're like, ah, we're not sure. I'm like, pause right now. Very quickly, you can feel like some things are of this importance and emphasis, and other things become secondary things. So my hope is even in this series, you'll feel like, wow, these are the most essential, primary things that Christians have said, this is what it means to follow Jesus. And these are the things, sometimes, are preferences, secondary things. They might change. You might be like, oh, I've changed my view on that, or I've changed my view on this. But on the essentials to be a Christian is to say, I affirm this creed. Now, let me just answer these very simple questions, and it takes a long time to answer these. We can do a whole class on that. But throughout the series, I'll often go back and talk about this again, especially people miss this, okay, and all these things. So when does the creed come together? We know that the Bible has, from the beginning, some early snippets of the creed. And if you look at the creed, a part of the creed, let me just, to help you, if you're online, you might not get this, but one of the parts of the creed is very, very clear, and it just talks about February 17th. If you look at your bookmark, it says this, on the third day, he, Jesus, rose again in fulfillment of the scriptures. So we know that the creed is already trying to bring together the things that people are sharing together in the Bible as they're reading it together. Now, it's very important to understand this. And if you ever have to share your faith with somebody who doesn't believe, you should know this one thing. You can fall asleep after I say this thing, okay? This is it. That people in the Bible did not have a Bible. You have to understand that. People in the Bible, as they're learning about God, they have the Old Testament, they have the Hebrew Scriptures, but the New Testament that we have today, Lucas talked about that, you know, how we trust the Bible, was still coming together in the early church. Some of the letters were circulating, some of the letters are still being wrestled with. We know that like even 100 years after Jesus is dead and resurrected, Christians are still going to wrestle with the book of Revelation. Should that be in our Bible? It's a hard book to understand. The book of Hebrews, should that make it in our Bible? So we know this. This is important to know. You know why? Because anybody who doesn't believe in Christianity is going to do something called a Google search, and they're going to know. So to be Christians is to know, like, it's true. The earliest Christians had the kind of faith to say yes to Jesus before they have the full scriptures of the New Testament the way we have it today. That means there's really no excuses for us. Now that we have the Bible and we have the scriptures and we can read them, there's really no excuses for us to be willing to say, wow, the truth of who Jesus was is available to us, because the earliest Christians don't have it available to them. The other thing, too, is that many, many people who lived in the Bible times couldn't read, okay? So if you give them a Bible and you're like, read this, they're like, we can't read. It's like asking Jesus to take the wheel. You know that song? Time for a joke? How many like that song? You can leave the church right now. You leave right now. I hear that song at Jesus take the wheel. I mean, Jesus couldn't drive. Why the heck would he ever take the wheel? It's the dumbest song I've ever heard. But people are like, oh, yeah, take. Hey, that's what Jesus would say. I don't know. I can't drive. I don't know what you guys are talking about. Okay, so remember that the Christians they, one, don't have a Bible, and two, even those who have the scriptures of the Hebrew Bible, they can't always read it. So they're going to have to kind of memorize something about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And guess what they memorized? They memorized the creed. Now, in your bookmark, we give you two different creeds. The one with the dates on it is often a simplified version of the creed called the Apostles' Creed, okay? And it's one of the earliest documents we have of how Christians memorized what it meant to say they were followers of Jesus. Let me give you an example of why this is so important, okay? That if you went to a village and you were living in the ancient time, even like today, and somebody came to your village, they came to visit, and they were a preacher. They came to like, hey, I'm a traveling evangelist. I'm going to come and preach at your church. You're like, oh, wow, that's amazing. You know, there's like we're a small village. We're like, you'd ask them questions. Okay, did you know Paul? They're like, oh, I heard of him. Like, okay, do you know Peter? They're like, well, maybe. Have you ever heard, like, do you believe in Jesus of Nazareth? They're like, yeah, we heard about it. And then they would start to think about, this person should know the essentials of the faith if they're going to preach to us. Do they know the creed? And so the Apostles' Creed, like you'll see it on, with the dates, it's a simplified version, is so easy to memorize. So here's your homework for this week. Would you consider just memorizing the creed? A way of saying that in these points that the church has wrestled through, we get the essentials and the roots of what the Christian faith is really about. Now, on the other side, we have something called the Nicene Creed. To know what that means, we have to come back next week, okay? So I'll tell you more about that. But this week, I want you to understand that the most essential explanation of what it means to say Jesus is alive and he's our Lord is in this Apostles' Creed, okay? So we have it from the earliest times, and we have passages of the Bible that are already talking about that. But the other thing is, who was this for? The creed was for not only people in a village to feel like, okay, we can kind of figure out if this person's a fake teacher or a false teacher, but also was for people who were preparing to get baptized. When somebody got to the place and they were ready to get baptized, they often were taught the essentials of the Christian faith, and then they memorized them. So before they got baptized, they said, I believe, and they would start to recite the creed. It's a way of them saying, I believe who Jesus really, really was. So I need to tell you one thing that you're going to notice right away. Some of you are perceptive, notice this quicker than others, that if you look at your bookmark, in the simple version of the creed, it says, I believe, and if you look at the other side, it says, we believe. Okay? Small change. This is really important, that as Christianity started to grow and the church started to emerge, there was a sense that Christians should learn to say the creed as we believe, as a reminder that it's not just one Christian and one church and one people group in one part of the world. It's we Christians believe with all the other Christians in the world today who are worshiping Jesus. We believe means we're part of a new family of people who believe this about who God is. That makes sense so far? I feel like you guys put your hand up to ask questions. You can go back and watch it. It's going to be on YouTube, and I'll keep going, okay? So when, earliest times, the early church, as the Bible's coming together, this creed becomes formed and starts to get used in different parts of the world, who? People who are getting baptized and can't really read or don't have a Bible are starting to use it as a way of like, okay, this is what it means to follow Jesus, okay? And why this was so important. I kind of hinted at this already. It was important because Christianity was growing. Christianity was starting to interact with people of other religions. Christianity was starting to interact with other people of other cultures. And so one of the most beautiful and unique things about the Christian faith is that the Christian faith was developed in such a way so that all the nations of the world could make sense of Jesus and still embrace who they were as a nation. Some other religions actually are ethnic religions. For example, if you were Jew, you were Jewish, you were part of the Hebrew faith, you were part of an ethnic group of people. With Islam, it's very much similar. If you really become a Muslim, in some sense, you have to learn Arabic and you take on a culture to understand Islam. Christianity is different. Christianity from the beginning was the kind of faith that because Jesus was alive and he was welcoming the nations to himself, every linguistic change and every time a new culture became a Christian, they needed to figure out a way to talk about Jesus in their language so other people would come to believe. So what did they use? Let's use the creed. Let this become the thing that we help people at its bare minimum, understand this is what it means to understand and to talk about who Jesus is. Kind of very simple, fairly simple, right? So Jesus in the Bible is already showing us that from when he was around, people had all these different views about God. And let me tell you, as confusing as you sometimes maybe feel, and I feel this too, when people today have all these views about God, we have no idea the complexity of religion in the Bible times. There were so many gods and so many religions, like your mind would just blow. You'd be like, how do you keep track of all of this? So in some ways, it's a little bit easier for us in our context. Okay? And so when Jesus finishes asking the disciples in the Bible, who the people say that I am, he's going to do the next thing he does as a great teacher. He always does this. He's going to ask them, who do you think that I am? That's always more dangerous. You're like, let us keep telling you about what people say. We're not sure yet. I'm like a little bit nervous. And you go to the next slide. You can see it. And you go to that slide. Jesus answered this. Who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. That's what Peter says. Peter's one of the first people who's following Jesus, although he's a hack and he's going to make all kinds of mistakes. Okay? Peter's one of the first ones that God starts to help him to understand who Jesus really is. And Peter tells us something about who Jesus is in light of God the Father. Okay, so now I want to just transition and talk to you about the first line of the creed. So if you look at it on your thing, it says, we believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. Okay, this is the first part of the creed. That Peter, already when he's with Jesus, will say, you are the one who's come here to remind us that we are the ones who belong to the living God. Okay? It's not just any God. It's not an ancient God. It's not an old God. It's not a cool God. He's the living God. The living God is the kind of language that the Jewish people used about their God, because God not only was living, a living God does something that only a living thing can do, which is create. And Peter is stirring, for the first time, is going to link the story of Jesus with the great story of Israel. Now, let me say something that's really, really important. If the creed stops here, we're all Jewish. Right? Like, this is it. Jews believe this. Even Muslims believe this. You know, so as we go through this series, you're going to feel how every part of the creed starts to refine and tighten and focus. This is what it means to be a Christian. Right? But at the beginning, so that's why, if you're watching online, please try to be here. No snowstorm next Sunday. But try to be here enough to see how the creed develops and gets stronger and firms up. But the first line of the creed is that we believe with all people in the world that we believe in a Father, God, who's almighty, and he's the creator of heaven and earth. He's a living God. If you've ever met anybody whose life is falling apart, one of the most powerful images of being with somebody who's going through a difficult time is they feel like everything around them is just dying. They feel that their hearts are broken, their souls are broken. And the biblical language for this is like to have bones that are just rotting away. Everything's falling around them. And Jesus says, Jesus, you're the one who's come and you're reminding us that God is a living God. And a living God takes dead things and brings them back to life. That's what he does. And this is such an important picture for us, because in the next few weeks, we'll talk about how Jesus will die and he will be raised back to life, because his Father is the living God. Now, let me tell you something really, really important. Whenever we read about the creed and the first part is about creation, I know, like you know, that we live in a world where everybody has an idea about how creation happened, okay? For some people, it's like, well, I think the Big Bang Theory is a perspective. There's a creationist perspective. There's people like, I don't care. All those perspectives are ridiculous. There's the Christians say this is the perspective. So right away, we can quickly get lost in trying to refine how creation happened. You'll notice that it's very important that Christians early on, they didn't say how God is the creator or the maker of the world. They just said that he is the creator and the maker of the world. He just is. This is a beautiful and wise decision, right? It leaves a lot of room for us to say, okay, how that all happened, we're learning. We're still learning. We're very finite. But that God is the creator and the maker of heaven and earth, the Father Almighty, is essential to what it means to say you're a Christian. Now, in the ancient world, I bet you'll never guess, and if I could get some questions, I'll let you try. You'd never guess some of those popular beliefs about the creation of the world. People in the Bible had all kinds of ideas about how the world was created. Any of you watch Spider-Man? Black Spider-Man, Red Spider-Man? Any of you? Yeah. Many people believe that the world created with a good force and a bad force fighting, and then the world was created. Others, the ancient Greeks had one of the most famous story about the creation of the world. It started with a mythical god. They believed his name was Kronos. And we get Kronos Watch from his name, right? And he basically is the kind of god who his mother convinced, right, that he should be the ruler of the world, that he should be creator of everything. And so his mother said, to make sure that none of your brothers or sisters try to take that from you, you should kill them all. And so he decides he's going to kill them all, and then him and his mother conspire to take over everything. This is one of the creation stories of the ancient world when Jesus was alive. And everybody in the ancient world was trying to answer this question. Where the heck did we come from? How did this all start? And why are we really here? See, because this first line of the creed is not only about whether you understand how creation started. This first part of the creed is that so you would wrestle what your place in the creation is. What your purpose in the story really is all about. And Christian said, let's just capture this in a very tight way. That we believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. Now, in this moment, in this story, you could just memorize that, hold on to that. We're invited to go read about the creation story in the Bible. And I'm going to read it very, very briefly for you so you can feel it and see if you notice some really important things. You can go to just in Genesis. On the passage. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void. And the darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Notice the water is not created yet, but the Spirit is over the waters. Figure that out later. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. One of the most unique differences about how Christians and Jews we'll talk about creation in this story, is that when God creates, he creates out of this loving goodness for his creation. You know how weird that would have been for other people in the ancient world to hear about creation, knowing that they have all these different views of creation, creation stories that have to do with vengeance and violence and forcing and power, and when it rains, it's because Zeus is angry, and when it lightnings, all of these ideas. Christians come along and say, you know what? We don't believe that. What do you mean you don't believe that? Dude, you don't want to get the gods upset. What do you guys believe? Well, we believe that creation is a gift from a good father that loves us. I get out of here. Are you kidding me? This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So you're saying that the whole world is created by a God from the beginning of time that creates us miserable humans with our all nonsense world, messiness, brokenness, anger, violence, and he thinks that this is good? That's exactly it. That's what we believe. And the Bible not only says that it was good, because it's not going to stay good. There's going to be a problem. We're getting to it in the creed. Don't worry. They thought about it. But that the goodness of God was so important to him that he creates us in his image and allows us to live in that goodness with him. This is how powerful this is. That everybody at the time who had another view of how creation worked, just like us, talk to your friend and ask them how the world started, whatever, we believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. He doesn't just create and hope it works. He creates, and in his creation, this is just the beginning of his passage, but in his creation, when he creates humans, mankind, men and women, he starts to create them. He's like, this is so good. It's going to be so good. You know why it's going to be so good? Because they're created in my image, and I'm good, and they're going to understand what that means. This is one of the most essential teachings of Christianity. Now, you know, most of the people, they're still busy lost on, but how do you believe it happened? Like, how is that going to work? Like, would you believe in science? Do you read science? Like, all that. And there's time for those conversations. Don't get me wrong, right? But let's just start with this, that we believe in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth, creator or maker, whichever word you choose. And there's this goodness that God gives into his creation. And he says, remember, if you want a picture of what that goodness is, and what that goodness looks like, think of me as a loving father. Think of that. It's such a beautiful word, right? It's a beautiful image that for many of us, we understand what it's like if you had a loving father, you get that. Now, I've been a pastor long enough, and I've counseled and prayed and cried with enough people who had a horrible father. Horrible father. I'm not just saying father makes mistakes, and I'm a father, and I know how hard it is to be a dad. But it's hard sometimes because we see this word father as one of the words that's going to be used. And we know that sometimes it doesn't connect with our culture. Because people are like, really, can we use another word? And Christians will say, let's hold on to the father image. Instead of changing it, let's redeem it. Instead of changing it, let's restore what it really means that God is like a father. Because remember, God is neither a father or a mother. These are just words to help us understand the mystery of who God is. The creed will say he's kind of the relationship of a father. A loving father. And this father is so good that he wants his goodness to be in all of us. And he wants us to live out of the truth of this goodness. So I'm going to ask you a question. This week, what would it look like in your life if you really believed that God was really good? What would that really mean? What does it mean to live in the truth that God, he's a good father? And that you as a Christian believe that? You know when you really have to wrestle with this question? When bad stuff happens to you. Then you're like, whoa, wait a second, what's that creed? Go to the fridge, get that thing. What does it say? Okay, almighty. But the creed, it pushes to say, do you really believe that God is a good creator? Do you believe that? Now, I've had times in my life where I didn't believe that at all. People in my family were going through a difficult time, and I wasn't sure if I was a Christian, and I was learning about the Bible. I'm like, Christians are ridiculous. I really struggled with this for a long time because I confused something that I think a lot of people confused. They confused believing that God is good and that I should feel good. They're not the same thing. Me feeling good is very different than God being good. Okay? God's being is good even if he does nothing. God is just good in him doing nothing. His goodness is there. Where for us, goodness is experienced only when we do something good. And so we can actually do something good for the wrong reason. Like I've heard a saying a while ago, and people say this all the time. You ever hear people say this? You got to kill them with kindness. It's a saying, I think it was a famous song. You've heard that? Joanna, sure. It's a song, and I hear people, and it's like, do something good to get them back. Don't really do it out of a good place. Do it to make them pay. And I often hear people say this because you got to kill them with kindness. I'm like, how about you just be kind? Why do they have to die? Why's the killing part? Because we even know how to skew goodness. We even know how to take goodness and turn it wrong. But God is always good. And he's a father, and he's not only good to us, the Bible tells us that he's good to every generation. I love this prayer in the Psalms, and you'll see it on the screen behind me. It's such a beautiful psalm. It says this, "For the Lord is good, and his unfailing love continues forever. His faithfulness continues to each generation." Every generation will have to learn again for themselves what it means that God, the Father Almighty, the maker, the creator of heaven and earth, is good. They'll have to learn that. We as a church will get a chance, this is one of our big responsibilities at a church, to make room so that the next generation understands this point of the creed. We could do it with telling them, preaching is important, but they're going to have to see it lived out in our lives. They're going to have to see it lived out among us. That even when we feel that things are falling apart or we don't feel as good as we want to, we would hold on to the mystery of the fact that like, God, you're doing something profoundly good that I don't think I really understand now. I've been watching these commercials on TV. I don't know if you've seen them. Bell is launching their mental health awareness, which is beautiful and an important thing that we're talking about. And over the years, as I've talked to people really struggling with depression, mental illness, I remember just looking in their eyes and them saying, like, if God is good, why am I feeling this kind of illness? Why do I feel like I want to die? What do I feel like nobody understands what I'm feeling? What's going on? And so when I say that God is good, I'm not saying it as like a nice thing you put on a bumper sticker. I'm saying it's the kind of thing that we learn to live in so that we can sit with people who are wounded and hurting and are wondering, what does this goodness look like? What does that even mean? That's what we're going to learn how to do. Because we have a generation today who will have all kinds of different ideas about God. And they're going to have all kinds of different ideas about creation. They will. But when you start to follow Jesus, you're invited to affirm as part of this creed that we believe in God the Father, maker of heaven and earth. The Nicene Creed on the other side will say things visible and invisible, right? And we believe that this God is a good God. And so just to kind of close, I want to just end by telling you this. In a few minutes, we're just going to sing a song, but it's 2 minutes. I want you to remember that Jesus teaches us how we learn to trust our good Father. Jesus teaches us this. And he teaches us this when one day he decides he's going to teach his disciples how to pray. One of the most powerful ways that we learn about God being the creator who's good and the kind of father who loves us is when we learn this whole essential part of the Christian faith of how to pray. Now, if you look at your creed right now, does it say anything about prayer? Not really. It's almost assumed that Christians would pray. This is kind of the more doctrinal framework of what Christians will believe. But when Jesus teaches his disciples how to pray, we notice something really, really important in the passage in the Bible. Let me read it for you. Maybe some of you will remember this. It says this. And when you pray, Jesus says to them, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, as other people who believe other things, for they think that they will be heard for their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Now, what's important about this is we know that people in the Bible times, even people who didn't believe in God, prayed. They prayed to other gods. They prayed to all kinds of different gods. And Jesus is trying to teach his disciples how to pray differently now. And the reason this happens is because they see him praying. And he'll say to them, if you want to understand how to learn how to pray like this, when you call out on God, remember that he's like a father. He's like a father who already knows what you need. And this is special for me because I'm a dad. I'm a dad, and there's some things my kids will ask me almost every day, to eat 20 chocolate bars, to have 20 cookies, all these things. And I say to them, you had one cookie, you can't have it anymore. And when they're really mad, they'll say this sometimes, I hate this, and they'll walk away. Then we lock them up in the garage, and we have to deal with them for a week. But they can't always feel that sometimes I might say something as a father because I have a different perspective that they just can't understand. Jesus says one of the ways that your perspective gets aligned with God's perspective is when you learn to pray. When you learn to pray, and I really mean pray. I don't mean the way like, I hope I pray when my car breaks down. I don't mean I hope it's a nice day for my daughter's wedding. I don't mean that. God doesn't care about that anyway. But it's a whole nother sermon, trust me. But I mean the kind of prayer life that every day says, God, today, you will teach me more about the person you're calling me to be and the kind of person I have to be in this world, reminding people that you're good, reminding people that you're the creator who loves us. And this doesn't happen by mistake. It doesn't just happen because you get up and it's sunny and you got more vitamin D. It happens because we become people who take seriously practicing to pray. And I know for many of us, this is overwhelming and scary. And so throughout the series, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to invite you at times to pray with us as part of the series so that you would be like, I don't think I know how to pray. And that we would kind of do it together in our service. But Jesus says, you can go to the last slide, This is what he says next. Pray then like this. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. All of you know this. It's the beginning of the Lord's Prayer. He says, if you want to really understand what it means to align your heart and what you want and what you hope will happen in your life, well, what God is planning, he's the creator and the maker of everything. And he has things that are so good in store for you. If you want those things to align, pray to the Father and pray this way. God, may your kingdom in heaven, may it be done on earth in my life. This is one of the greatest prayers you'll pray. Not what I want, but what you want. And help me to see that. Help me to understand that. Not what I want for my kids, but what you want for my kids. Help me to see that. Help me to learn that. Not what you want for this church, but what, not what I want for the church, but what for you want. This is so easy to preach, but it's different to say, I'm going to start to pray with the creed. Maybe you want to just read the creed and say, God, there's truth of this creed, this ancient way that your followers have talked about who you are. And I need to learn to pray in a new way this year. That's probably my biggest regret in 2018. My biggest regret in 2018 was that I didn't pray more. I don't know what it is for you, but the beginning of the creed invites us not only to believe with our minds that God is a creator, and to have a discussion about science and creation, but to be the kind of people who live the truth that God is good and that he loves us. We're going to have one of our teens come up and sing a song as kind of a response time for us to help us just say, God, this series needs to anchor us in a new way in this day and age where people have no idea what it means to be a Christian. I just want to remind you of something really, really important that you maybe never thought about, that an anchor on a ship does its best work when you can't see it. If you can see the anchor, it's in the wrong place. But when you throw it off the ship, and it sinks to the bottom, and it hooks down, and it begins to do its work, which is hold, it's invisible to us. You just have to, like, you just feel stability. When we pray, we learn something about God that says, you know what, even though you can't see me, I am the Creator, the Father Almighty, and I have a way of anchoring your life in my goodness. We believe that. That's what we believe. Let's just stand. And just as the song is sung, just kind of hear it as a prayer. Maybe for some of you, you know someone and are feeling that life just doesn't feel good now. Things don't seem like they're going in the right direction. Maybe today's prayer is, God, anchor me in the truth that you are a father and you know exactly what I need even before I speak. So as you hear these words, just let it be a prayer over you. And I'll come up and I'll close in just a minute. Sing it for us, Olivia.